It is immaterial whether or not you like or accept socialism or communism. The absolute compulsion of your facing the problem which they try to solve is inescapable. While I am sure most of you realize this worldwide change of emphasis, I doubt if you see how this affects the Negro problem in the United States. Because most American Negroes of education and property have long since oversimplified their problem and tried to separate it from all other social problems. They conceive that their fight is simply to have the same rights and privileges as other American citizens. They do not for a moment stop to question how far the organization of work and distribution of wealth in America is perfect, nor do they for a moment conceive that the economic organization of America may have fundamental injustices and shortcomings which seriously affect not only Negroes, but the whole world. There is in America today a confusion of mind so tragic and misleading that our whole thought and philosophy is distorted. At the very time that economics, that is, the study of work and income, is of foremost importance to our well-being, economics is not being studied in our schools. Neither in the elementary schools nor in colleges are students learning about the philosophy of money and exchange, production and trade, wealth and saving. Our university students are pouring into chemistry and physics and deserting history and sociology. Why? Because to us, the basic problem is how large an income we can get, how much money we can control, what careers for our children will ensure them the most wealth. The object of our ambition is rising to higher and higher income brackets. And what we see as progress is escaping from manual labor to white-collar jobs, thence to employing others to work for us, then to coming into possession of so much property that we need not work for ourselves, so that we may sit in stark idleness or grovel in dissipation, having never learned anything to do except to arrange to have nothing to do. From this contradiction arises the strange paradox that the poverty for the worker must be perpetual in order that he be compelled to work for the rich. To most Americans, this paradox is at once true and impossible. They sit dumb and bemused before it. What is life but the attempt of human beings to be happy and contented in a world which, with all its ill, has a mass of sun and waters, of trees and flowers, of beauty and love? To realize this at its highest, we need food, clothes, and shelter. We need health of body and balance of mind. We want to know what this world is, how its wonderful laws act, who its peoples are, and how they think and act, and how what they have done in years and ages past may guide us today. We want to see, realize, and conceive beauty in form and line and color. We want to know our own souls and the myriad-sided souls of others, and then to imagine what might be if what is should grow to what we wish. This is life. This is the end and the fairy tale of life. We know this, and yet we sit dumb and muddled before it, seeing the world as a twisted contradiction. Yet the problem is simple. We have a rich land, earth and water, minerals and vegetables of every sort, breathtaking scenery in mountain, ocean, river, and vale. We have combed the earth of its races for strength, intelligence, and daring. All that is asked is that each of us do what we can, first to supply our own wants in food and shelter, health and learning. But more than that, that we do for others what they need done and cannot do for themselves, and yet which must be done lest we suffer. Beyond that, there are many tasks which all working together can do faster and better than many working apart. All for one and one for all is an axiom of life. And to refuse to let all work in common would be as silly as to let no one work alone. All this is clear and true, and yet it is blinded in our eyes. The object of work for many is not to work. The end of labor is not to do what must be done, but to get somebody else to do it. The wealth of the nation, the land and water, the coal and oil, the iron and aluminum, ought not to belong to the nation, some say, but to those who by chance or cheating have legal power to make you pay their price for what God gave them. Even if 10 or 10,000 men combine and in sweat and sacrifice make steel, wheat, corn, meat, or shoes, the results of the combined labor belongs to one or to a few of them, while the others scramble to keep from starving. What has gone wrong? It is clear that the workers do not understand the meaning of work. Work is service, not gain. The object of work is life, not income. The reward of production is plenty, not private property. We should measure the prosperity of a nation not by the number of millionaires, but by the absence of poverty, the prevalence of health, the efficiency of the public schools, and the number of people who can do read worthwhile books. Toward all this, we do strive. But instead of marching breast forward, we stagger and wander, thinking that food is raised not to eat but to sell at good profit, that houses are built not to shelter the masses but to make real estate agents rich, and solemnly declaring that without private profit there can be no food nor homes. All this is ridiculous. It has been disproven centuries ago. The greatest thinkers of every age have inveighed against concentration of wealth in the hands of the few and against the poverty, disease, and ignorance of the masses of men. We have tried every method of reform. A favorite effort has been force by war. But the loot stolen by murder went to the generals and not to the soldiers. We tried through religion to lead men to sacrifice and right treatment of their fellow men. But the priests too often stole the fruits of sacrifice and concealed the truth. In the 17th century of our modern European era, we sought leadership in science and dreamed that justice might rule through natural law. But we misinterpreted that law to mean that most men were slaves and white Europeans were of right masters of the world. In the 18th century, we turned toward the ballot in the hands of the worker to force a just division of the fruits of labor among the toilers. But the capitalists, fattening on black slavery and land monopoly and on private monopoly of capital, forced the modern worker into a new slavery which built a new civilization of the world with colored slaves at the bottom, with white serfs between, and the power still in the hands of the rich. But one consideration halted this plan. The serfs and even the slaves had begun to learn to think. Some bits of education had stimulated them, and some of the real scientists of the world began to use their knowledge for the masses and not solely for the ruling classes. It became more and more a matter of straight thinking. What is work? It is what all must contribute to the common good. No man in this world has a right to be idle. It is the bounden duty of each to contribute his best to the well-being of all. Of what men gain or do by their efforts, all have a right to share, not to the extent of all that they may want, but certainly to the extent of what they really need. We feared yesterday that if all the reasonable needs of all men were met, most would still starve. We know better than that today. All may eat and none need starve unless some insist on cake when others have no bread. And that, says modern justice, is crime, even if the starving man be Negro, Mexican, or Korean. From this program, even from any attempt to realize it in any way, many of the most powerful nations today and many influential persons not only are opposed, but threaten world war on nations and hell and damnation on people who even dare to think, much less talk, of a world without poverty, without ignorance and disease, and of attempts to realize such a world organized civilization deliberately lies. Let me cite one instance. England, a few years ago, adopted social medicine. It arranged that every Englishman should get free medical attention, hospitalization, medicines, and dental care. It was a desperately needed reform. There is no reason on earth why such a measure should not be characteristic of every civilized nation on earth. Yet every disaster was predicted, and every lie scattered to stop it. It was tried in Britain. It was a marked success. Even world reaction has not dared even essay to displace it. The utmost that Churchill attempted was to restore a small payment on false teeth. Despite the marked success of this simple act of justice to human citizens, the physicians of the United States launched an outrageous propaganda, backed by money, advertising, and lecturing, until every ordinary American is firmly convinced that social medicine in England is a failure and that any step toward it in America would be revolution. Even a great mass of the Negro physicians administering to a sick and diseased people who need social medicine more than any part of this nation have, with a few honorable exceptions, line themselves with those distinguished white physicians fighting to defend disease and death. This brings me to the crux of my message. We Negroes are not fighting tonight against slavery. That fight is won. We are not fighting in vain for the ballot. We hold the balance of political power in the North, and either we get the vote in the South or we come North and get it here. But we are fighting, and fighting desperately, the economic battle for the right to work and to get from our work food, housing, education, health, and a chance to live as human beings. But in this fight, we are not alone. With us stand and must stand, whether they will or no, the white workers of America and of the world. The continuation of a colonial world of slaves and serfs, cheek by jowl with a free world of workers with modern technique, is no longer possible. The effort to achieve this by yelling communism and by propelling this nation to pour death and destruction on helpless Korea and to seek in every way to re-enslave China must and will fail. You, as voters and intelligent citizens, must force peace on the professional soldiers and the business leaders who make fortunes in war. You must let the world know that this is your simple and unwavering program, the abolition of poverty, disease, and ignorance, the world over, among men and women of all races, religions, and colors. To accomplish this by just control of concentrated wealth and overthrow of monopoly, to ensure that income depends on work and not on privilege or chance, that freedom is the heritage of man, and that by freedom we do not mean freedom from the laws of nature, but freedom to think and believe and to express our thoughts and to dream our dreams and to maintain our rights against secret police, witch hunters, or any other sort of modern fool or tyrant. If work and ever-increasing categories of work must be carried on for the common good, work like education, forest preservation, and flood control, the suppression of epidemics, research into disease, the broad planning of cities, the allocation and integration of industry, if all this must be done for the good of all, it cannot be done by private initiative. It cannot be carried on for private profit. It must be planned. It must be conducted under discipline. And any set of social leaders who try to stop this social progress are enemies of mankind and destroyers of human culture. The four freedoms come not by slavery to corporations and monopoly of the press, cinema, radio, and television, but by united social effort for the common good, so that decently fed, healthy, and intelligent people can be sure of work, not afraid of old age, and hold high their heads to think and say what they damn please without fear of liars, informers, or a sneaking FBI. This is the life and the conception of life, which today is being denied us. Instead of regarding work as honorable and necessary, and its object as human service, we look on work as something to avoid, and its object as private profit, and so far as possible, profit for the man who does not do the work. Most Americans believe that without the incentive of private profit, industry would collapse. No. The object of work is what it does for human beings. And in all the long history of mankind, this has been the open and avowed end of human toil. It is only in the curious interval of modern history marked by the discovery of America and the theft of capital, monopolized by force and used to enslave most of mankind to work for the few, that a theory of human life has arisen which reduces the people of Asia, Africa, and the islands of the sea to toil for the wealth of Europe and North America, and even in these lands makes most workers, although better paid than colored workers, yet too poor to be healthy and intelligent. When then modern world revolution started, of which that in Russia was but a part, revolution which has changed the face of industry in every modern nation, including our own. When that appeared here in America, there started a desperate effort to lead this nation into witch hunting and world war, to stop this world trend toward abolition of labor exploitation and toward a real brotherhood of man. and to abolish forever the vulgar rule of private wealth. Thus, the peace movement epitomizes in itself the world uplift today, and of this, American Negroes must become increasingly aware if they do not want to fall behind progress and hold back the march of men. This does not call for force or revolution. It does call for courage even to the loss of jobs, for daring to think and guts at least to listen, to the refusal to mistake money made by gamblers either at policy or in the stock market, or display of clothes or homes as progress. Progress is peace, and peace is time for food, homes for love, health for happiness, and books to read. Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful robe.